Well, you got stabbed a billion times, got dumped by your famous wife, and crawled into a bottle. I think it's safe to say that you're on the suspect list. This is Scream 2022.
Attacks so far. Do you have a gun?
I'm Sydney Prescott. Of course I have a gun.
Something about this one just feels different.
Samantha?
I know who you are.
I've been through this. A lot.
This is your life now, which means that whoever this is gonna keep coming for you.
You ready? For this?
Never.
No, son, wait!
There's certain rules to surviving.
The attacks were all on people related to the original killers.
Whatever his link is to our past, it's pulled us all back here.
And I won't sleep until he's in the ground.
Welcome to Bela Lugosi is Undead. I'm AJ.
And I'm Ryan.
And today we are talking about the 2022 film Scream. Okay, Ryan, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I felt like it was like a meta commentary, which is like very Scream of them to do, right?
Like, yeah, isn't it though?
Doing a commentary not just on horror, but like doing a commentary on movies in general, like sequels and requels and all of those sort of things. It was interesting.
Well, you know, that's a great point, because I've had this discussion with a lot of people recently, and I find it a little interesting that people have had such a negative reaction to it in some corners. A lot of people I know rank it towards the bottom or the bottom of the Scream movies, and
wow.
I've even heard it referred to as The Force Awakens for Scream, and I'm like, but yeah, that's like literally what they're doing. That's like
the whole thing
they're critiquing. So
you got a lot going over your head.
Well, it's not necessarily going over their head, because they're dead on about what it is. But
yeah.
I think that there's a difference between, like, yes, this is what it literally is, but this is also a franchise that is known for actively critiquing stuff. And I think
exactly
for me, and you don't have to follow if you don't have it off the top of your head, my ranking of the Scream movies is number one at the top, obviously. This is my second favorite Scream movie, because 2, 4, and 3, I do not feel have as strong of a way to critique, like, the genre, or as strong of a way to critique, really, the just Hollywood in general. I think especially 3 is, like, the weakest of the bunch.
Sure.
But you also have movie like, Jay and Silent Bob are in 3.
I'm going to be very blunt. I saw 1 when we were recording it, and then, like, that's my Scream. So I saw 1, and then I saw this movie. Like,
that's fair.
So that's where I've been in the Scream lore.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame you for not having seen the other ones. Because other than 2, I think 4 is just, like, I have issues with it. And I think it's a movie I'll have to rewatch, and maybe I'll push for us to do it later down the road on the podcast. But I think the production quality is, like, the biggest thing that holds me back from, like, loving that movie. It feels cheaper than the other three that came before it, which just sucks because I love Wes Craven.
Sure.
But I just think it literally feels like a knockoff version of Scream at times. Where, you know, this one, I think, looks amazing. And on top of that, like I said, I do feel like it updates the franchise for a modern lens. It has active commentary, both on, ironically enough, Rian Johnson, who we brought up a lot on the podcast, but also on requels, on the Halloween movies, on, I mean, even after this movie released, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the new one, came out like 3 weeks later, and
we will not be doing a new one on that.
But the irony is, it has all of the problems that this movie identifies as problems. So it's not like dissimilar to something like Walk Hard: Dewey Cox Story, where it's like musical biopics are always these things, and the parody is so strong that then when you see a movie that follows that formula, you're like, why are you doing this? Why are you wasting your time with this? And that's really how I feel about the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and it's why I think Scream already has validated why it needs to exist the way that it does. All right, so with all that being said, I'm going to try to do the 90-second plot description.
Yes, I'll get the timer. And stopwatch. Ready? Whenever you're ready.
Okay.
Ready? Go!
All right, so one night, a young girl named Tara is at home making herself some popcorn, chatting with her friends, Amber, over text. And all of a sudden, she gets a phone call, somebody calling for her mom. Well, she's freaking out because it turns out it's clearly somebody with ill intent. He's trying to hurt her. He reveals that he's trying to kill her. So she's, oh, God, I'm going to get murdered. Well, this guy posing as Ghostface gets into the house. He stabs her a bunch, but she does not die. Her sister, Sam, who lives a few towns away, ends up rushing back to town. Sam and Tara have been a little estranged for years, and Sam brings her boyfriend Richie with her so they can try to figure out what's going on, try to support her sister while she's recovering. Ultimately, all of Tara's friends are there to support her as well. This includes her ex-boyfriend named Wes. This includes Chad. This includes Mindy. It's a bunch of Liv. It's a bunch of her friends are all there to try to support her. But it's clear that a Ghostface killer is back, and slowly people start getting killed off. It becomes clear that a Ghostface killer is back. So of course, Sam and Richie go to the only person from the original series that's still in town. And that's Dewey, played by David Arquette. They say, "Hey, Dewey, we need your help." So when Dewey starts to help, he calls Gail, he calls Sydney, and lets them know, hey, Ghostface is back. So they all start converging on the town. Ultimately, while trying to protect Tara when she's being hunted by Ghostface again, Dewey is killed by Ghostface, meaning that Gail and Sydney are there to try to support Sam and Tara. It turns out that Sam's past is kind of dark. Her dad turns out to be Billy Loomis, and it's why she left town, because she thinks she's the daughter of a serial killer and wants to protect Tara. However, it hasn't mattered, hasn't helped. They end up in a house being chased by the killers, and it turns out that Tara's, the person that she thought was her best friend, Amber, is one of the killers, and so is Richie, Samantha's boyfriend. They've been fans online. They love the Stab movies, and the only way they can save the Stab franchise is to reinvigorate it by bringing the original characters back and killing them, namely Gail and Sydney. So they lured everybody to town just to save their favorite franchise, because they love Stab movies. And then they get killed off by Sam and Gail and Sydney. And, of course, they all save the day happily ever after.
Okay, you need to step your 90-second up. Cause...
yeah, that was not 90 seconds. Not even close. I'm pretty sure I was, like,
I think you're, like, a minute and 10 seconds off.
Wow.
Step your game up.
Fair enough. All right, so while they were trying, next time just cut me off at 90 seconds.
Yeah, okay, sounds good. Done. You're done.
There you go. That really dives into the core of what I think Scream does so well in this movie, is that Scream 22 is very focused on the requel aspect of the movies, of how every single franchise feels like it has to bring back the original characters to have them do another movie, or else it's not seen as a legitimate movie. And even if it is, and if you handle those characters poorly, then you're still not seen as a legitimate movie. And the fans get upset online, and they get angry. And so, at its heart, this movie is a critique of Star Wars The Last Jedi's response from fans.
This movie is like a commentary on like fan culture and society and mob mentality and like everything. And it really makes me wonder if Scream was a commentary on society as a whole at the time, or if it was just a meta commentary on horror, or are they just trying to go bigger with like a requel like they do in all the other requels.
So I think the original movie had a lot to do, had a lot of conversation about violence in movies and how that affects people and how that affects the audience. And that was a heavy refrain: do video games and horror movies create demon worshippers and killers? Like that's always been something that's kind of been at the heart of it. Sure. And, you know, as the original Scream puts it, she says, "You sick fucks have seen one too many movies." Billy's response is, "Movies don't create psychos. Movies make psychos more creative."
That's true.
And I think that, you know, that movie obviously had bigger ideas on top of like absolutely crushing the genre at the time, the slasher genre. And I think that this movie has bigger ideas as well, through the fact that it is trying very distinctly to really like talk about this toxic culture that has infected any franchise at this point. Like, no movie's ever good enough for everybody. And now that we have this culture where people can be loud and angry about it, they're, even like if it's only 1 or 2% of the culture surrounding a movie, it's really loud.
The passion behind Marvel movies is mind-blowing to me.
I find it very interesting to see how intense some of the reactions have been to it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. It seems like there's a lot going on in this space, and I think that Scream's commenting on it rather like well.
Yeah.
So we do have some information about how this movie was made. First of all, it's directed by Radio Silence. We never talked about that. Radio Silence is a trio: Tyler Gillette, Matt Bettinelli Olpin, and Chad Villela. Villela? I think that's how you pronounce his last name. Sorry, Chad, if you happen to be weirdly listening to our small podcast. We love you guys because they also directed one of my favorite movies of the last 10 years in the horror genre, Ready or Not. Absolute banger of a movie. They've directed little segments on Southbound and on VHS. And they're this like horror collective that they're a filmmaker collective that two of them serve as director and the other one serves as the producer. And they all work together to build these cool stories and movies. And they're awesome. And what did you think of Radio Silence before this movie with Ready or Not? Or if you've seen the original VHS
movie? VHS is an amazing movie. The original VHS is... I show it to people. So whenever I start dating someone, I have a list of movies that I show them. And VHS is a movie that I've seen over and over again because it's just such an interesting anthology. And obviously, Ready or Not is good. Like, it's a good movie. It's a... What is that? A reverse home invasion movie, basically?
Yeah, it's like a... It's like an Eat the Rich kind of movie, so...
Yeah,
just a lot of fun.
Like, yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, no, I think that... I think that they really are good at capturing the horror-comedy blend.
Yeah.
And I think that makes them a really obvious choice to direct this movie.
Yeah.
The other person who comes on board, who ultimately brings in Radio Silence and brings in some of the other people involved, is James Vanderbilt. James Vanderbilt is an interesting figure. He's worked a bunch of different jobs in Hollywood, but really, like, the biggest thing that he did that put him on the map for me was he wrote Zodiac for David Fincher, which is awesome.
That is a great movie.
Yeah, like, he's done more mainstream movies since then. Like, he did Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2. He did Truth. He did Independence Day Resurgence. So not everything's been a hit, per se.
Sure.
But, I mean, when you have Zodiac in your corner, like, I can't argue with what you've made. And I like Truth quite a bit. It's a movie about 60 Minutes and critiquing George W. Bush's, like, political, like, or his military service. But anyway, I think Vanderbilt is a really interesting guy. And he brings in Guy Busiek, who also writes the movie with him. And what's interesting is they, like, watched the movie separately, and then both came back and said, "We have to kill Dewey." And I thought that that was... I mean, they just knew that Dewey had to die in some way. And what I also thought was interesting is they also directly are commenting against Halloween, the new version, the 2018 version, because that movie picks and chooses what is canon, what is not canon, and they're like, no, we're not going to do that. Everything is canon. Scream 1, Scream 2, Scream 3, Scream 4, Stab movies, all of it's canon. And they just went forward with it. James Vanderbilt wrote, one of his wife's name is one of the killers. So he was afraid she was going to get in trouble. She signed off on it, all good. Radio Silence comes in. They're like, oh, we love Scream, sure. Like, they knew that James Vanderbilt was, like, writing it. And they, like, talked about, like, a movie with the studio. And they just thought it was, like, a general meeting. And they didn't realize that, like, they were interviewing to direct the movie. So they accidentally kind of stumbled into it. The other thing is Guy, the co-writer on the movie, got James Vanderbilt called him. And he's like, hey, you want to write Scream with me? And he's like... I'm on my way to my 10th anniversary with my wife. Let me think about it. And he's like, I'm going to do this for sure. So it turned into what he said was, he said it was a combination of celebrating his 10th anniversary and also like the biggest gig of his career. Also, because this movie was a COVID production, interestingly enough, the opening of the movie was the first thing they shot with Jenna Ortega. And then... they had to come back and finish it because COVID happened in between. So everything on the phone is all practical, which is actually like super interesting. That's not a common thing that happens in movies. Most of the time they just green screen phones at this point. They put like a literal like green screen over the thing and then they'll just like digitally put on whatever they feel like they need to. So everything in the movie like that they can do practical is practical.
Wow.
And they also ran into an issue where Jenna Ortega was only 17 when they first started shooting, and so she couldn't shoot past midnight. But the scene had to take place at night. So when they started,
so they had like 2 hours to shoot the thing.
Right. So they when they started the movie, she was 17. When they came back to film the end of the movie, she was 18. So they could film however the way they wanted.
They filmed the first shot, which is like the hardest shot. Like...
Yeah. Exactly. They see little jokes at themselves throughout the movie as well, which is obvious. You have to do that when you're doing the meta movies. At one point, one of the characters says, man, the Stab franchise really went off the rails on the fifth entry, and this is the fifth Scream movie. So they're directly commenting on how shitty their movie is going to be, which I don't believe. I don't think it's actually a shitty movie, but I think it's funny that they made fun of themselves ahead of time. They also bring in a bunch of legacy characters, obviously Neve Campbell. She's just, like, cutting shit on the fly, and she's like, yeah, I don't know. You went too deep on this meta stuff, not deep enough on this stuff. So she's basically rewriting part of the movie on the fly. David Arquette read the script, said, yes, I want to die. I want to be Quint from Jaws. Let's do this. Did all of his own stunts. He said he got, like, actually cut up in shit, so... Like he got slammed into the glass. That was like one of their last shots. And for anybody who knows, David Arquette wrestles as well, so he can do these stunts for sure.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
They also wrote a second version of his death scene to have him survive. And after they shot, they're like, not an effing chance. This is what we have to go with. Let's go ahead and talk about the cast. There's obviously half the cast is legacy characters, half the cast is new. So, where do you want to start?
Let's build up from the new characters. I'm interested to learn more about them.
Okay, so, first off, there's a handful of new characters. The first one we're introduced to is Jenna Ortega, who has become something of a modern Scream Queen herself. She began her career kind of as a Disney actress. She's the opening stabbing / wounding in this film. But in the last, like, 3 years, she was in, obviously, Scream. She was in X. She's one of the main characters of X. She's in The Babysitter Killer Queen. She's in You. So she's done, like, a lot of stuff in, like, the last 3 years. So I think Jenna Ortega is one of the more interesting people to have brought on. Again, she was 17 when they started filming the movie. She's 18 by the time it ends. So we still have a lot of Jenna Ortega ahead of us, for sure.
Yay!
Yeah, she's probably going to get nominated for an Emmy for The Fallout as well, which is a movie about a school shooting from earlier this year. So she's definitely a star on the rise.
Sure.
Melissa Barrera, she plays Sam. She's the, I think, our protagonist of the new movie, moving forward with a new version of Sydney, more or less. And she'll probably continue to lead other movies. She was also last year in The Heights, in the musical that was released for Warner Brothers. Huge, big movie. Mm. And I thought she was pretty good in that as well. So I did not recognize her in this movie, I'll be honest, from the last from In the Heights. So she played very different ages, very different kinds of characters. So that speaks that she's probably going to have a nice long career as well. Yeah, do you watch The Boys at all?
I really want to. I just haven't gotten around to it. Okay, once I start watching a show, I, like, lose days.
Fair enough. Well, Jack Quaid, who plays the boyfriend, slash one of our evil killers, he actually is on The Boys. He's one of the main characters. He's also the son of Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan. So, nice little nepotism, baby.
Yeah.
No, he's actually very talented. I think he's super into it. When I was researching about him taking on the role, he actually would go onto Scream forums as his character and got the name Stabhead, and would like post on forums about the new Scream movie, like fighting with people.
Oh my god!
So he like. He actually also teamed up with Mikey Madison, who plays the other version, who plays the other killer in this movie. And she and him would text about how much they hated Stab 8. So that was like part of their prep for the movie. They actually developed like an offline or an online persona where they would fight with each other about how shitty Stab 8 was. So I thought that was funny.
It's so funny.
Mikey Madison, she has not done a ton in her career, except she was in a Best Picture nominee already. She plays one of the Manson family girls in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. She was also on Better Things on FX. So she's another person who we need to be keeping an eye on. Clearly somebody with talent. I think that's the biggest thing about this movie, is this is the first time since the original that I feel like they stocked it full of actual teens and young adults who are going to be superstars. Even Dylan Minnette and Jasmine Savoy Brown and Mason Gooding, the three of them are all overqualified for the roles they're playing in this movie. Like, they're all going to be bigger stars.
Yeah.
Dylan Minnette plays Wes. Awesome. Yeah, Dylan Minnette plays Wes. He's the first kid to die. He also was the lead of the Goosebumps movie, of the one from a couple years ago. Jasmine Savoy Brown, she was on The Leftovers. She was on Love. She's on Love. I think you liked Love, right?
I love Love.
Yeah. Character? She played Annie.
Okay.
She's also on Yellow Jackets now, a show about people getting eaten.
I want to see that so bad.
Yeah, about cannibals.
That, like, no one owns. Like, what's the streaming service on? Is it it's on Apple?
It's on Showtime.
Showtime, that's right.
Yeah, Mason Gooding, he was in Booksmart, he's in Scream, he was in I Want You Back earlier this year, he was on Star Trek Picard. Wow. So it's like...
These are huge actors in this movie.
these are, like, they actually got together, I think, the first cast that really feels like the next time they're in a movie, they're all going to be super duper famous.
Wow.
And it's basically across the board. Everybody seems like they're super likable, super talented people. And I love
that. That's fascinating. Do you think that's because Scream is like such a, like, it talks about like culture and it's like meta commentary on horror. So even people that hate horror liked Scream, you know, because it's making fun of horror basically, that like,
yes.
They like the mass was able to like pick up like good actors, because like, I mean, you look at Halloween, you look at, I mean, the Texas Chainsaw, like you look at all these requels or whatever, and like they don't have like these superstars, you know what I mean?
It's true. I wonder if it is true because
it has this like more mass appeal, was able to get the funding to get these like up and coming superstars for this movie.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I mean, like, Scream 4 definitely has some, like, really good people in it as well. Like, it has Emma Roberts, it has Hayden Panettiere, you know, it has Adam Brody, but I still think it still is not working with a cast as strong as this one.
Right.
Like, I mean, I think that even, like, having, like, Alison Brie and Kristen Bell and Anna Paquin in, like, smaller roles doesn't help that movie. It feels like they're more there just for like cameo purposes, where these are like main characters of the story. Like, at the end of the day, Scream 4 was still largely about Neve Campbell, David Arquette, Courtney Cox, this one actually feels like a baton handoff.
Yeah.
And so I do like that more about this one.
I guess, like, talking about the requel, like, conversation, like, what are your thoughts as, like, a movie critic when it comes to, like, that baton handoff sort of feeling that movies are giving now? Is that, like, good for movies? Like, bad for movies? What do you think?
I think requel culture is really bad for movies in general.
Yeah.
I think the thing that it, like, does is it forces an over emphasis on nostalgia above anything else. And when you're overemphasizing nostalgia, it doesn't allow this thing to become the next version of the thing you loved.
Yeah.
I think it dates back to IP culture. It's already bad enough that we're essentially getting reboots of all of the things that we already loved when we were kids. Yeah. But when you then add in also the original person has to come back, then it's like, okay, like, but, like, why? I think, like, a great example is, like, in 21 Jump Street, right? Like, they did the two movies. They had two of the characters, Johnny Depp and I forget who the other guy was, from the TV show up, and they both immediately got murdered. And then in the second movie, there's, like, not really any allusions to the Jump Street, like, TV show, and it's better because of it. I think that, like, we are cutting off the ability to mint new stars as we go up. I mean, like, I think that it just kind of becomes a snake eating its own tail. That's my biggest issue with it. I mean, I love Jurassic Park. I love those movies. I did not need the old characters to come back to that franchise. Like, I just didn't. Like,
I know. It's just so unnecessary. Well, it's just the last rendition.
Well, especially that's the thing that bothers me, is it's very rarely, like, we're ending this now. Like, if it logically makes sense that they would be involved, then that's okay.
Right.
But if it doesn't logically make sense, then why are we spending our time on it, right?
Yeah, I feel like Halloween did it. I feel like Halloween did it well, right? But still, I don't love it, right?
Right, yeah. Like, you know? Like, I'm okay with Laurie Strode coming, like, seeing Laurie Strode all these years later as the result of everything that's happened to her. I don't like the fact that they ignored most of the movies in between.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just like, just let it happen. Like, either everything is canon or nothing's canon. And if nothing matters, then it lowers the stakes, right? Because ultimately, if it's bad, then you just reset it anyway. So what's the point of that? I just don't get that.
No, I hear you.
Yeah, I mean, how do you feel? As somebody who's not necessarily as critically minded as I am, how do you feel about
it? I mean, what I sort of see is, like, something similar to, like, I don't know, like, a scene, like, a punk rock scene, like, the fan culture and stuff like that. Like, they're like, oh, it can only be this, right? And if it's not only this, then, like, it's not really part of this piece of art or this piece of music or this movie, right? Mm-hmm. Then, like, what it does is it just creates, like, cut-and-paste music and cut-and-paste, like things, you know what I mean? You have to have innovation, and to have innovation, you can't have, like, the mob mentality actually, like, push you in directions, right? And, like, because, like, they need to make money and they want to, you know, do these things. And, you know, like, I think the worst possible thing that happened was, like, the sequel to The Strangers, right? Where that was a solid B movie that they could have used for, like, 80s nostalgia and, like, callbacks to 80s slashers and all those things. And they use an intellectual property that I love personally. And I'm like, just don't use the intellectual property. Go make your movie. Right? Like,
right.
But they're like, get the intellectual property to, like, grab money from it. It sucks.
Well, and what becomes especially hard in, like, horror is that, as you and I have covered many times before, the genre already references itself anyway.
Yeah.
So the Easter eggs are already there. So why do you need the literal recreation of the Easter egg every time?
Right.
I find this interesting because before we recorded, like, a couple weeks ago, there was a whole discussion about Neve Campbell coming back for Scream 6 and 7, right? Because obviously this movie was successful. They're already working on a sequel. We'll have a sequel next year.
Okay.
And there was a whole discussion about, well, they're not giving her enough money. Why are they not paying her enough money? And it's like, well, maybe Sidney Prescott doesn't need to be in Scream movies anymore. Like, I mean, like, what else could she do at this point that she hasn't already done in a Scream movie?
Yeah. Bringing her back, that felt forced. I mean, luckily it's a Scream movie, so it's ridiculous and silly.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But, like, it just is so forced. It's like she's, like, walking her baby. Like, it's like, of course I have a gun. I'm Sidney Prescott.
Right. And I think that the way that they wrote it is the best possible way to write it, because
The
only reason that she comes back is because Dewey is killed.
Yeah.
And that makes sense to me. Otherwise, she's going to stay away.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how do you feel about them actually killing off Dewey?
I mean, I'm not as, like, deeply entrenched in Scream. Like, you know what I mean? So, and from what I remember from Scream 1, wasn't he poorly portraying, like a person with, like, intellectual disabilities in the first movie?
It's funny you mention that. So, in the scary movie, they make him into, like, an actual person with a mental handicap. They make it worse.
Like, mixing up.
Well, but they make that joke because it's kind of there on the screen that he's like a man child, but then they obviously Scary Movie took it way too far.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, like, he's a good character, but I'm okay with him dying. Like, it didn't make, and that's another thing that I know people have cited that as another instance. They're like, oh, it's like killing Han Solo in Force Awakens. And again, if the movie wasn't explicitly, like, referencing requel culture and toxic fandom and Star Wars, then I would have a bigger problem with that, but it is explicitly mentioning that.
That's what the movie is about.
It's about about people who are annoyed that the franchise took a different direction and not liking that, and then fighting back against that. And ultimately having characters die is the only way to advance the stakes at all. Like, in this, for those characters. Because if they're going to survive every single time, then there are no stakes. It's the issue that I had with the Obi-Wan TV show, is that in the final episode, 6 of the 7 characters of note all have to survive because I know they make it to A New Hope. Right?
So it doesn't, there's no stakes in the movie because we know.
Exactly. So that's how I feel about, like, the requel culture, is it either they use characters' deaths cheaply, which I do not think the Dewey death was cheap. I think it made sense.
No. Yeah.
But I also think that, like, it's either you use the death cheaply or they have plot armor and they can never die.
So let's talk. It's a cheap death, but it's Scream. So he dies because he breaks the rule. It's Scream.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep, exactly.
He goes back to kill the killer. He goes back alone. So he dies within the Scream culture. So
there's a
makes sense.
There's a consequence for his action, right? He's out of danger, and he goes back into danger, and that's why he dies.
Right, exactly.
Like, so that's the thing to me. Like, it's not even like he doesn't go in there like Han Solo does, such like try to, like, help the killer and make them understand anything. He goes in to kill somebody, and the other person just happens to get the upper hand on him.
Yeah, exactly.
So, well, you know, that's actually a great segue into some of our awards. But the last thing I wanted to mention before we jump into the awards is there's a scene towards the end of the movie, and it's not really a surprise that – so Dylan Minnette, his character's name is Wes. I think the way they kill him is really good, where they do, like, the 1,000 fake-outs before they finally just kill him.
Yeah.
Where it's like every time he, like, opens the door, you're expecting Ghostface to be there, and then he, like, closes the door, and then there's no Ghostface.
Yes.
After his character does eventually get killed by Ghostface, there's a scene at the party where one of the characters goes, "For Wes," which is an obvious reference to Wes Craven. And they all everybody takes a shot. And what was cool about the movie is that they found a way to have Drew Barrymore, Jamie Kennedy, Henry Winkler, Marco Beltrami, who did the score, Hayden Panettiere, Wes Craven's widow, all of the original people are just offset. And so when you hear the "For Wes" and everybody takes a shot as a party, it's all of the people saying goodbye to Wes Craven.
Oh my god!
Like, they were all either on set or set in recordings to salute him, and that is awesome.
I'm like tearing up. Yeah. I'm like tearing up hearing that.
So, like, even people who were, like, smaller in the movie. Okay, so let's go ahead and jump into our awards. So first up, best kill. I only really had 2 choices for this. The best, really, there's 3 choices. Let me repeat that. Okay, so the first one is Amber. Amber is the girl who they set on fire and shoot in the face with Dewey's gun at the end of the movie. I think that has to be our winner.
That's a pretty good one.
Especially, yeah. especially because she also gets set on fire in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So it's like actually kind of funny that she's now done this twice.
I'm just that girl that gets set on fire.
Yeah. The second one is Richie, who is the boyfriend who is one of the murderers. He gets stabbed 20 plus times. And it's when Sam acknowledges her lineage as being Billy Loomis's daughter. So I think that scene's pretty awesome.
That is pretty cool.
She also then tries to get up. Of note, by the way, when Amber gets back up, when she gets shot, Jenna Ortega puts the bullet in her and goes, "I always liked the Babadook more anyway." also a great little one-liner. But those are the two that stood out to me. I think you could also argue that the death of Judy Hicks, the sheriff who comes back, that was unexpected, and it was a pretty good kill.
I think she wins our next award, though.
It's a great point. Okay, so we'll go ahead and we'll give Amber the best kill award. Her death is epic. Marion Crane, gone too soon. I think Judy Hicks, easy call.
Yeah,
she doesn't necessarily deserve to die that quickly. She was in Scream 4, so she had another movie, but I was expecting more of her, so.
Yeah, she was an interesting character. I'd like to learn more about her.
All right, the Tom Savini best effect of the movie. It's either Wes getting stabbed in the neck by Ghostface, which was done practically.
That's
good. Or I would say the de-aged Billy Loomis. They only brought in Skeet Ulrich for a day, and they shot all of the footage in one day and then used visual effects to de-age him to make him look 17 again. He also looks eternally young, so I'm sure it wasn't that hard. But it is pretty cool that they did it. Also of note, Kevin Williamson, who wrote the original movies and was the producer on all the original movies, he thought that Billy as a ghost was like super weird and did not feel like Scream, so he said you have to do this because you're actually changing part of the story. I like that. So there's like a lot of cool things. Cool. But did you like the Billy Loomis ghost sequences or no?
I thought it was cool that they did it. I mean, it was clearly. I mean, I guess you know, just like Leia in the movie, you can see it because you know.
Okay.
Right.
So.
But like people like. I was with my partner. They didn't even know Leia was like that wasn't a person because they never had seen the movies. So they're just like, "Oh, that's I didn't even know that was CGI."
Interesting.
You know?
Okay. So if that's the case, though, I would say that it's the West neck stab because it's this practical stab in the neck.
Neck stab is dope.
All right.
So cool.
All right. So the scared as shit moment of the week. I said it's either the opening scene of the movie, the West taunting scene where it's like every time he opens a door or closes a door, you're expecting Ghostface to be there.
Yeah.
But I think it's more played for comedy. Yeah. I would also say the hospital killing sequence that ends with Dewey's death. Those are to me, it's either the opening scene or the hospital killing. Do you have a preference?
I think the opening scene is always scarier.
Yeah.
From the original, I like the callback, and I think that was actually scary. I mean, we knew it was going to happen because we've seen the original.
Well, we also know she doesn't die, like, after the fact.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make it any less scary because you assume she's dying. I think my favorite part about that scene is when she goes to lock the doors with the smart lock, and it keeps unlocking. Yeah. I thought that was such a cool... Yeah. That was, like, a cool use of modern technology and, like, creative.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, horror writers are always, like, bitching about technology, but that's a cool way of using it the other way.
Exactly, right? Where most movies try to remove technology from the fray, they openly embraced it.
Exactly.
Again, that's another cool thing for this movie to do. The Steve Hadley Biggest Regret Award, it has to be Amber. She's set on fire. She is shot with the gun of the man who she killed. It has to be Amber.
Yeah.
Like, double trophy for her this time.
Yeah, double trophy.
Kurt Vonn, most overconfident. Again, Amber has to be in the conversation. Yeah. Wes is pretty overconfident for most of the movie, but then he gets killed. I don't know.
Yeah.
Judy Hicks, running in to go save her son, only to get murdered immediately. I also have Dewey in the conversation. Overconfident Dewey.
Yeah, I think Dewey's the most overconfident.
Yeah.
He's like, yo, I'm going to go double tap this dude.
And he gets murdered, gets stabbed multiple times.
Yeah.
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 All right, so
What do you think?
I think Dewey. I think you're right.
Yeah, all right, good job. All right.
The Norman Bates moment of the movie. There's only the two. It's either when Dewey gets killed, you're like, oh shit, the stakes are real. Or it's when Amber shoots Liv in the head.
That's pretty good. I think the Liv kill.
The Liv kill,
right?
Because like there is still an air of mystery. There's still like a question about who it could be. Yeah. I was able to figure it out pretty quickly, but that was like the confirmation and the reveal is really good.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so
I like
let's
that.
Knock that out. Okay. Icon feedback. It's going to actually be from C. Robert Cargill, who hosts his own podcast, Junk Food Movies. It's all about, like, exploitation movies and cult movies. But most notably, he also wrote Sinister, wrote Black Phone, wrote Doctor Strange. So, like, somebody who's an awesome dude on Twitter and also in the industry.
Right.
So, he said, I have long been on record as not being a Scream fan, but finally caught up with the new one and loved it so much, I'm sincerely thinking of rewatching the series to reassess my feelings on them. The Radio Silence Scream is so fucking good.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so somebody who didn't even like the franchise saw this one and was like, I'm in. Like,
wow, that's fascinating.
This is a guy who loves horror and genre movies, doesn't like Scream, and loves this movie.
Yeah.
Mandy Award, is this their peak? I'm going to run through the list real quick. It's mostly the established people who I already knew before this movie. David Arquette, Neve Campbell, Jenna Ortega, Jack Quaid, Mikey Madison, and Dylan Minnette. I think there's really only two people we can consider for this. I think it has to be David Arquette or Neve Campbell. My argument being, David Arquette, this is like an actual send-off for his best character. It's coming years after his original, like, popularity. He rose and fell and then came back. So it's very much in the Mandy, like, mold. I also think it's his best performance in the franchise to this point.
Yeah.
So I think it's David Arquette.
What I remember, it was in the movie. Yeah, I'm down to give it to that.
Okay, cool, yeah. I think Neve Campbell has been the lead of three movies, and she's Sydney Effing Prescott. So,
yeah.
Like...
she won every other award for all the
others. I think that the first one is obviously like her peak. So, yeah. All right. The Breakthrough Award. I have it as Melissa Barrera, who plays Sam, Mikey Madsen, who plays the girl who gets lit on fire, Jenna Ortega, Jasmine Savoy Brown, who's like the nerdy black girl who explains what requels are, Mason Gooding, her brother, and then Sonia Amar, who plays Liv.
It's hard because it just came out, so, like, to call it a breakthrough, right?
Yeah, it is hard to give it to anybody yet. I would lean towards Jenna Ortega as part of her rise, because between being in Scream and then X a few months later, she's now, like, an established star that horror fans know. Like, she was in stuff before, but then now she's, like, on the map. So I'm leaning Jenna Ortega. But Melissa Barrera, the only reason I'm not giving it to her, even though she's like the protagonist of this movie, is that she had already had her breakout in The Heights. So that's my rationale.
I'll give it to you.
And then who won the movie? I think that there's really only two people again. I think it's Radio Silence or James Vanderbilt. Because James Vanderbilt delivered a good script, but Radio Silence, like, their direction is awesome. And the way they make this movie look is awesome. So I'm leaning towards them.
Yeah. I'm cool with Radio Silence. I think that's a good... I think, like, their story on how they got the movie and coming together and, like, and having, you know, the different opinions and wanting different things and still creating something really great is really cool. That, like, a group of people can do that.
All right, cool. All right, so that is Scream 2022.
New blood.
Ryan, how would you rank the movie on a scale of 1 to 10?
Let's see. I'd probably give it a six. Yeah.
A six.
It's enjoyable.
All right. And I'm a little bit higher on it than you, but this is also my pick. So, I was always going to be higher on it than you. I give it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, makes sense. All right. Cool.
All right, so you guys can hit us up at webottomblogmedia@gmail.com with any questions or suggestions for new movies in the future. You can also hit me up at TheAlanFrench. That is both my Twitter account and my Letterboxd username.
And you can hit me up at KeepItSpooky09 on Twitter, and that's where you can find me.
All right, so if you guys make sure you like, review, subscribe as well. We haven't been saying that in our other podcasts.
But
please do. Please give us some reviews, because we want to make sure that we know what we need to fix or what have you.
Absolutely.
All right, cool. Well, thank you guys so much for your time, and have a great week.
Yeah, keep it spooky.